Welcome to episode 11 of Devil's Trap Podcast. This week, we'll talk about pie.
And also dick magic.
As well as shady vans and the bitches who ride in them. Woo. Let's do it. Episode of Devil's Trap Podcast. I'm Diana.
I'm Liz.
And this week we're talking about episode 11.
Scarecrows. 11. 11. I hate scarecrows. I really do. I am not a fan. I am so not a fan of this one. And we'll get into reasons why I am not a fan. Actually, there are a lot of things I love about this episode, but I don't like scarecrows. Anyhow, so before we get into that, what's on the beverage menu for this evening?
I am once again enjoying some TX whiskey, which is weird for me, but I got some new diet ginger ale. It's the Zevia ginger ale, so I wanted to try that with it.
Did you get it from Costco?
No, I didn't. I am not drinking anything from Costco tonight. You're welcome. I made a little cocktail with that. Plus, our alcohol level, I mean, our wine's back on point, but we drank a lot of wine last night and a little bit.
I got text messages from her last night, and I think Diana was going to bed around 9. And I was like, I wonder if Diana's going to drink it all tomorrow.
Yeah, we drank a lot of wine last night. It was our Sunday night getting ready to start the week wine drinking, apparently. And the night before, we drank margaritas and then wine. So I had to kind of figure out what I wanted to drink. And after my stepson was here for, or Dave's son, my stepson was here for about a month, our vodka supply is gone, so I had to be a little more creative with my drinking. How about you?
I am drinking a Ron Yates. Ron Yates is a wine from the Texas Hill Country. They are one of our 290 wines. Went through there by last wine tasting, and this one is called Amalgamation. I really like the name of it. It's just a blend. It's a Texas red wine blend. All these grapes are from Texas High Plains. And I do like how they prominently put 14.3% alcohol by volume right on the label. So yeehaw. I'm going to be feeling good by the time we're done with this episode.
Nice.
So apologies in advance for all the shitty things I'm going to say about stuff. So,
oh, yeehaw.
Also, we will post pictures because Diana is super fly tonight. She is rocking this beehive and this like burnt orange like turtleneck sweater, and she is just she's a groovy chick. Groovy chick.
I was feeling some 60s vibes this morning when I was getting ready. It's all right, you know.
Yeah,
my Duchess the Cadillac is in good shape. She had a little bit of a rough weekend, and then we got it resolved, so you know, I'm feeling my 63 Cadillac was inspiring me, and I felt the 60s vibes when I was getting ready this morning, and my hair was dirty and I didn't feel like washing it.
This is also the difference of people who work from home and people who don't. I got dressed at 6 o'clock tonight, so I mean, I was wearing workout clothes for most of the day because sometimes I feel like if I wear workout clothes that I will go into my exercise room and actually do stuff. I did get on the rowing machine for 5 minutes today, so I was like, hell yeah. Like I got my heartbeat up, and my fit tracker was like, what are you doing? What is happening? You're not being sedentary. But then of course, like now it has the things that like alert you, like you should get moving. I'm like, I'm eating lunch. Like, do you want me to be running while I'm eating lunch?
I get really excited when my watch tells me that it's time for me to stand. I'm like, I should get up and stand up and walk around. First I get mad about it. And I'm like, fuck you. I'll stand up when I fucking feel like it. And now I'm like, ooh, I met my goal for the number of times I stood up today. I don't know.
Yeah, I did not.
Little things.
And the thing too, is like, once you really start looking at it, it is amazing when you have a small house, how little I'm actually like moving from my desk, which probably explains a lot of things. But I'm like, oh, and they're like, your step goal should be 10,000. I'm like, no, fucker.
It is my goal. I have not hit it very often. It's a lot of steps. Though I did a different workout this morning and it made me feel not cool at all, but it's okay. I did one of the, I did a dance one. One of my apps, I did a dance workout. Like their take on like Zumba-ish shit.
Did Dave do it with you?
No. No.
Damn it.
I would have liked to have seen that.
He
keeps asserting that he wants to take a hip hop dance class. And I am here for it. So
am I. I don't think you should take it with him. I just want Dave to take it, and that's you to send back.
I just
want to
take one on my own. I don't want to take it with him, but I would take a hip hop dance class. That'd be fun. But I'm more excited about him doing it.
I surprisingly do have rhythm. You know, once upon a time, I did teach dance classes with shout out to Little Bit. If you're listening to this, I hope you are. I haven't talked in a while, Yeah, we used to teach when we were in undergrad. That was how we supplemented our income, was by, and also how we got into shows for free. Before we both started DJing, it was like, hey, we can start the show early, and we'll teach people how to swing dance because it's really not that hard. But it was also when there's, I'm not that great. I can follow.
I'm a great follower at that.
But I always thought it was really funny, and no offense to my father, but I really thought, because, you know, I used to like two-step with my dad at weddings and stuff, and I was like, oh, I don't know how to dance. And then I realized that it's my dad who doesn't know how to dance. I was like, oh, no, I can do this. So, but it's been a while. I haven't been to, usually now it's like at a wedding or something, and it's been a while since I've been to a wedding, because my friends are all old and divorced. Other thing I did do this weekend was I was attempting to go through the Wicked Baker's cookbook. So the Wicked Baker apparently is a goth chick who was on the Great British Baking Show, and now I have to go watch it, because I was like, oh, I don't really want to watch this show, but now I'm like, there's a goth chick on it, fuck yeah, I want to watch this. And she put together this bakery, and so now my kitchen is full of all new baking stuff. I have a new utility cart that I have to assemble to put in all my new supplies, because my house is not a house that is unfortunately it doesn't like increase in capacity to hold all my shit. So yeah, the pantry is like, no, stop putting. But also, like, I find that when I have like cool baking things, they go into the pantry and I forget about them.
Yeah.
And they sit there. So I did go through a lot of the pantry and just get rid of things that are there from past baking projects. And
you baked this weekend too from it, didn't you?
I did. I made lemon thyme tea cupcakes, which were delicious. Then I got diabetes from eating the icing as I was making it. but I made them into, I made little sandworms, because that was one of the things in here. And it was a very nailed it moment where it's just like, oh yeah, your sandworms are so cute. I'm like, oh, mine are not cute. They looked good enough. Like they photographed well, but there's also like, I only did it for two cupcakes, because I gave like some, my cousin stopped by and I gave her some to take to her kids, but I didn't like, they're packaged to go. And I was like, I'm not going to put sandworms in these because they're going to fall apart. And also, what's the point of like, I love decorating stuff, but you're not going to eat modeling chocolate, right? I'm like giving it to you and for your children. Your children would be like, oh, cool, I want to eat this modeling chocolate. And they'd be like, ugh, this tastes like crap because it's fucking modeling chocolate. I mean, at least it's not fondant.
I'm the one that likes fondant, so I'll eat fondant. I don't give a shit.
Fondant's so gross.
I don't know why. I kind of like it. It's like a gummy, like Necco wafer. And I'm like, okay.
Well, and this was my first time really playing with it, and I like it. I mean, it's, you know, I've sculpted before, so it's like sculpting, but it is a really difficult medium, because once you start working with it, it's really pliable. Well, then if you're trying to make something that has a shape, then it was just limp dicking it. And like, then I was like, okay, well, I need to throw this in the freezer. And I was like, I put them on a plate in the freezer, and then they like dumped out and they all were in my ice cube tray. So then I had like all these like Beetlejuice snakes all over my ice cube tray. And I was like, hopefully I caught them out. I got them all, because I can't, I'm not
talking. You're just going to find sandworms in your freezer for the next
I
year.
I am going to find sandworms in my freezer. Well, they weren't painted yet, because that was a problem too, is because to do a sandworm you have to paint around it, so as I was touching it to try and move it around in a circle, and I was trying all sorts of things to get the black ring around it, that's really was a problem, was trying to figure out how to manipulate it so I can get to the bottom of it,
right?
So Yeah. Also, the cat has joined us. She is perched on my shoulder. She is here for our episode.
Into it. But yeah, we were driving Duchess to go, our big weekend excitement, other than going to eat at one of our favorite restaurants in Dallas on Friday at Niwa. We went and grilled our own meat and it was delicious with some good friends. And then on Saturday, we had a big family. We had my family got together for a big dinner to celebrate my brother, who is leaving for Navy boot camp on Thursday. So pretty exciting stuff. He's getting ready to go freeze his ass off up north. Like, they're sending him to, well, he'll be in Great Lakes area. So that's where.
That'll be fun. We're excited. I need to look at the picture you posted on Instagram, because I know, like, he shaved his head, and I've never. Oh, yeah. Her brother. So also, if you don't know, Diana's family is, whereas I am a tiny, tiny person, Diana comes from a family of giants.
I'm the shortest person at 5'9¾", but I claim.
Yeah. And Jamie, her brother is, what is he?
6'3"-ish.
6'3"-ish. And he usually has really big hair. So not like, you know, 80s rocker hair, but just like a mop.
He has a lot of hair, and he's worn it shaggy or long before. And then just kind of when it's short, it kind of just, you know, kind of does like a cool stand up thing. I don't know. Yeah. Hair.
So yeah, I'm very intrigued to see what he looks like with a shaved head.
Pretty funny. He said his head's a lot lighter. I'm like, yeah, that happened.
That is what happens when but did he find weird bumps? I mean, I'm always like wondering, like when guys shave their heads, like.
It didn't look like it. He had a barber shop near the house that he's gone to for a very long time, and someone that knows our family a little bit, named Hollis at Barbersville, had insisted on wanting to shave his head when he left. So he went and saw him, and it was kind of sweet. But yeah, we had a nice little gathering to do all that fun stuff and drink too many barbaritas. That's what we call margaritas that my dad makes, and.
Yeah. I also did get my hair done this weekend. My salon is really, it's really good for a pandemic hair salon, I think, because all the stylists have their own like offices. So you're not around anybody. So you just go in your mask and you go and you sit in your room. It's just you in your room and your stylist. And then, you know, so when she's like there dyeing her hair and then she leaves. And so also it's really great if you don't like people. And I also generally like beauty salon talking usually drives me fucking crazy. So it's just like, cool, I'm going to sit in here and work on research for this week's episode. And was trying to figure out what we're going to talk about this week. And finally, when we get to Laura, we'll talk about some of the things I thought about going through. But
fun.
Yep. So I think that is time for to get started.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Lots about us and now about the episode. All right, so go for it.
Crew. Mm-hmm. All right, this first aired January 10th, 2006. So we're kind of close to, you know, we just hit February when we're recording. So this was, you know, a seasonally close to where we were. This was directed by the fabulous Kim Manners. So we know he's done lots of things we love. Teleplay was done by John Chabon, who's the one who did Skin and Hookman, and we'll see him in some more episodes. But the story was by Patrick Sean Smith, and this is the only Supernatural episode he wrote, but he also produced Dolly Parton's Heartstrings. What? So we got a Dolly Parton he wrote and produced on that. And then he was also the creator of Greek. And I haven't thought about that show in a very long time. And now I want to go back and rewatch it. I don't know if it's on. Did you ever watch that show?
I did not.
It was not a long-lived one. There was probably only like 3 or 4 seasons, but it was about, you know, it was a college one, but it was a quirky college one. Okay. I want to go back and revisit it. So that's who wrote this.
Well, we'll get into. I got some interesting cast notes that I wanted to share, because I don't know what it was about this episode, but I felt like everybody, I was like, I know that face from somewhere. And most of them I didn't, but I still found out some interesting shit, except for one I did recognize for sure. Laura Gilchrist plays Holly. And obviously we'll get to where these people fall in the story. Basically, she's just in a shit ton of Lifetime and Hallmark holiday movies now. I thought one other person looked familiar, the guy that played Scotty. Ends up, though, he's in multiple Supernatural episodes in later seasons as well. He's in about 3 episodes, one in season 1, and one in season 6, and one in season 15. Just kind of interesting that recasting. Another interesting one was the man who played the Scarecrow actually in this episode is Mike Carpenter, who is also in an episode in season 6, another one in season 8. Most importantly, what he is known for is being main stunt person for the movie Elf. There you go. So I'm excited about that because that is like one of my favorite holiday. That is,
it is. It
one
is.
Of my favorite holiday movies. It's greatness. And then one of the most exciting casting notes.
Okay,
though,
I was wondering. Episode, I was like, wait, are no, we we're getting there? This?
No, we are building up to the professor at the college that Dean goes to visit. Is played by William B. Davis, best known as the cigarette smoking man on X-Files.
Yeah, I was like, no, she can't miss that. Like, that's
No, I like my X-Files. So, and as a side note, he also did have a role in the Sabrina, the New Adventures of Sabrina. He is Methuselah on the Witch's Council.
Oh.
All right, we got to tie in.
I never caught that one. So,
thank you, IMDb. I was really proud of myself.
But
I felt really
dumb
because I'm like, some of these people, I'm like, that looks familiar. And I'm like, nope, don't know that. I've looked at what they've been and I haven't seen any of that shit. And then some of these, and I was like, oh shit. When I got to that.
No, but the Methuselah thing, like, now that I think about it, I'm like, no, shit, that is him. Yeah. But he also looks the same age as he did in 2006. And whatever he did, X-Files 1990, whatever.
He's kind of maintained from like the late 90s on, apparently, which good for him. Man.
We may have a lizard person. We've got a lizard person.
So yeah, so kind of a cool, kind of some cool tie-ins, especially we got a Sabrina tie-in too. So there we go.
Yeah, we're getting all our spooky tie-ins tonight.
Woo. All right, so let's talk about this episode. So the episode starts and it says 1 year ago in Burkittsville, Indiana. And there's a couple leaving a restaurant, obviously. We won't go too deep into just
they're getting pie. I think
but
pie is
pie.
Pie is the unnamed hero of this episode, is the pie.
Free apple pie. A whole one, not a slice. They get given a
fuck yeah. And I was like, would you want to murder me? Okay, offer me a free pie. And you can probably get, you will get very far.
Yeah, and then it's a couple that obviously run like this rest stop restaurant kind of thing. And they do have a teenage girl with them. And she says, cool tattoo to the gentleman leaving the couple. Anyway, so he's just, nothing really happening. No, but it's kind of like this just very obvious, placed tattoo.
Yeah, I don't know how I did not get in there. I did this not get in my notes, but at least she says cool tat.
Gets loose later. This time she says tattoo. Okay, Dean is the one who says tat. So that's on him, and we will get there because we will get there.
You also have that in your notes. Okay. Because I was like,
said cool tattoo and he said thanks. And it's just like, it looks kind of like a not tribal in like the shitty early 90s way, but tribal in the like an actual like Polynesian inspired kind
Polynesian,
of.
But also a little bit Scandinavian too.
Celtic kind of a look, Celtic or Asian tribal influenced kind of forearm tattoo. I'm trying to note it because I'm like, if she's mentioning it and it's in the episode, it's going to be important. Damn it. Like cues. I know my cues to make notes. But so they're getting directions and figure out their names are Vince and Holly. I reference them to go Holly. Anyway, so they're driving. Obviously, they're in this town where everybody's way too nice and they fixed their car for them and gave them directions back to the highway and they start driving away. So you know some bad shit's going to happen, obviously.
Clearly.
As they're driving, the car like dies. It was a weird die too. It was like just kind of sputtered and stopped and then power went down and then their phones lost power too.
Well, there is part of it. It's like, well, that's what you get for driving that shitty Mustang. I can't throw shade on that. I actually had that Mustang and I love that. I loved Mustangs, but it wasn't like I had as a lean or anything. At some point in your life, everybody should own a Mustang, but I'm not surprised it broke down. I was like, yeah.
You're like, yeah, that happens. Maybe that happens. Look at your car.
Yep.
But the first instinct after your car breaks down on an abandoned road with no lights in either direction is to see this house apparently hidden back in the woods and go wander into a fucking orchard.
I mean, it was pretty close though. I mean, so if I'm on this desert,
it looked close like when they said they were going to do it. But then once they started walking, it was a long fucking way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There is that you're on a deserted highway. How many cars are going to come through? And yeah. I don't know. But
yeah,
anyhow.
So anyways.
So this is my note on this. So they're walking through the apple orchard, which actually were hazelnut trees and not apples. Oh. But the set decorators put buckets with apples next to them.
So yeah, that's what I saw. So I'm like, okay, it's an apple.
And it was like, clearly that's, you guys are terrible at clearing your apples. Like you just take them out and you put them next to the bucket.
Yeah.
The apples are supposed to go inside what you're picking, not next to them.
I mean, hazelnuts are delicious too, but... That's
just kind of. I'm not a huge hazelnut fan, like, but
I mean, sometimes I like it in coffee. I'm not like a hazelnut fanatic here.
Well, I mean, I like Nutella. So I'm not a Nutella crazy person.
No.
And I did have them on one of my Green Chef meals last week that had I toasted some hazelnuts and it provided some crunch, but they're not my go-to.
That sounds like a lot of work. that's such a brat.
You just put them in a pan and you shake it. It's
yeah.
You shake it like a Polaroid picture and then you have toasted hazelnuts.
Like my shimmy.
Diana's doing her 60s.
My little 60s
twist.
Shimmy. I got my 60s twist going on. So anyways, so I like that though they go and they see this creepy ass scarecrow and then they acknowledge how fucking scary it is and they keep walking and
it is scary.
It's like Leatherfacey, like sewn together fucking nasty face, gross ass, like that is not a normal scarecrow.
No, it's not.
Scarecrows are already creepy. This is not your standard scarecrow. And they don't seem that fazed by it other than to be like, it's creepy. And then neither of them notice that it moves its goddamn head when they move past it.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Not a fan.
I will say that this is a favorite episode of a lot of the cast members and director. Really? Just because of how creepy that scarecrow was. They're like, yeah, we did a lot of things with this that were creepy as fuck. I'm like, you're right. It's creepy as fuck.
Yeah, very creepy. Yeah. So, I mean, basically, as to be expected, then all of a sudden the scarecrow is off of the post that it's on and they're being chased to the woods. Guy gets, separated from the chick. And all of a sudden he gets dumped faceless next to her. And... yeah, she's screaming.
It ate his face.
And anyway, so, and of course she's like trying to run away and Dot's going to get her too. Obviously. Yep.
I do think at some point though, I'd be like, fuck you, scary scarecrow. And like, you're a goddamn made of straw and I'm going to fight back. Like, I'm not going to be running at you. Like, I'm going to be like, you're a goddamn scarecrow. No, sir. Not today, scarecrow.
There's like, I mean, so many, like, I mean, is there was like ladders and like baskets
full of apples,
like nothing. You're just gonna scream and crawl backward, crab walk backwards on the ground, which is not an efficient way of moving. I get
crab walking backwards unless you're a poltergeist is never an efficient thing. Like it's just not. It's something horrible that trainers make you do in boot camps. Sorry, now I went to a real scary place. It's like,
the scarecrow got shit on my trainer.
I was like, oh my God, I got to crab walk and then do a burpee. And yeah.
But
okay, anyways, so yeah, scary scarecrow eats them. Yeah. The end.
So
we're done.
So we cut to the to their cool ass hotel room that Sam and Dean are staying in that last episode ended on. And we're picking up actually with that last scene right now. I mean, they
which
literally,
I was happy with. Like it
ties you back into where you were and it carries it over pretty well. It didn't bother me. It took me a second. I'm like, wait, I saw this. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, this ties it in.
For me, it was a nice continuity. I'm glad that they didn't like just jump over what had happened. They played it back a bit so you can kind of like. And then I was like, oh, also Jean still doesn't have a shirt on, so I'm just like,
here's like bonus.
Anyway.
So obviously it's Dad on the phone, and now we actually get the conversation instead of just Sam answering the phone and it being Dad. Which is pretty important and really, I mean, a conversation, I guess, it just really is. And I think this is carried on through, has been built up to be this conversation where really Sam wants to know where the fuck Dad is and wants to know what happened to Mom and therefore Jess, which Dad acknowledges he knows what happened to Jess. Dad doesn't want them to find him. He doesn't want them to come look for him at all. He doesn't want to work with them. He wants them to go do other shit. And Sam is just like, no, fuck you. I'm going to come find you. We want to figure out the real mystery. And so he's kind of the one that's the questioner, Whereas Dean is the one that's like, takes the phone from him and is like, yes, sir, we'll be there. Because he wants to go do exactly what dad tells them to.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's kind of the.
I mean, yeah, and obviously, these are not new roles, but we do learn, like, we learn some really cool things, but we learned that it was a demon, right? Yeah. So it's a very interesting fact for us. Like, okay, now we actually know that there is something, like, this was not a poltergeist, this was not a ghost, this is a demon. And then also, by what John is telling them, is, you know, these things are watching us, we're not safe. And I think that's an important storyline note. Also, I already told Diana there's a lot of things this episode that I'm trying to back off of because I don't want to be a spoiler person. But that he said, so not spoiling.
He did say that. No, he did. It didn't really stick with me, but yeah, he absolutely did say that. And I don't know why I didn't note it more. I guess I was just so focused on the relationship of like, yeah. I wrote, Sam asks questions, Dean follows orders. And that's what I wrote. And I think that that was a good summary of kind of that conversation. But that also, you see how that's part of the wedge between them and because their perspective is so different.
Well, and clearly that becomes a major part of this episode.
Oh God.
But it's, but also in a good, I feel like, and we'll, you know, I feel like this episode resolves this in a way. So I'm no longer so angry at it. Like, yes. I was like, okay, we've been building up to this in the past 11 fucking episodes. Mm-hmm. At least, like, we finally, I think we make some progress in that relationship.
In their communication, in their relationship. We have a breakthrough in this episode. So obviously, because of this, Sam wants to go see dad. Dean says, no, fuck you. We're going to go solve this mystery. And Sam kind of, a couple of the specific lines that I thought, or quotes, little snippets that I thought were interesting was that Sam called what Dean has blind faith in their dad. And Dean views it as being a good son. So I thought obviously it's just repeating their stance on their dad's statement, but I thought those were specific lines. So Sam says, gets out of the car and says, Sam says, I'm leaving, even though dad sent them on this mission to go. It's where the couples are missing, which happens to be this Burkittsville, Indiana. But Sam says, fuck this. I'm going to go find dad. I'm going to California. Deuces. And gets out of the car in the middle of the road and walks off with his bags.
which is impressive because you're in the middle of fucking nowhere. And like, okay.
I'm like, you, even if you went like further away from your destination, you'd probably still be better off if you got to like, I don't know, a gas
station. A town? Yeah.
Anything.
But, you know, and also, like, what is in your bags? Like, I'm very impressed. Like, whatever you have, like, you're ready to go. And somebody did note that, like, Sam took the laptop and just, you know, so the laptop is Sam. So how is Dean's going to research? Does Dean have a second laptop? I don't know if, like, baby, like, in the back of her trunk is, like, there's a side thing in there. And this is 2006. Laptops are expensive. I don't know. You know, Sam has the Palm Pilot. You know, so, I mean, or the BlackBerry, who knows what's going to happen with Dean technology wise. But also Dean was really, the other thing I think too was kind of interesting was that Dean was really impressed that his dad was like, pick this pattern out. So I'm like, damn, John, the dad. And he's like, you are multitasking. Like you're searching for this demon at the same time. Like you have multitasked and like this shit that happened in Burkittsville, Indiana. Like,
found this pattern. Damn,
like unless some other hunter found the pattern. I don't know. But still it's just like, wow, that is Dean's right. It's impressive.
Yeah.
And there is also this line of which is to me this kind of what's more important. Is it helping other people or helping yourself? Because to figure out what happened to your mom and to Jess is helping yourself. Mm-hmm. And so when Dean calls him selfish, like I don't think he's wrong. And it's not, but I don't necessarily think, you know. It's a bad thing that what Sam wants to pursue,
I think it's being selfish sometimes is okay.
It is, but really is like, okay, you have this opportunity to help other people. And while Dean is doing it partially because dad ordered him to, he's also taking this other road of saying, I want to go pursue this and help other people. This is what I do.
I think he needs to help other people, but that's a different, deeper thing. So they kind of do like this thing for starting right here where as Dean gets into this Burkittsville where basically they both like do like pick up the phone like the shitty scene in like movies where a couple breaks up where like they hold up the phone like they're about to call them and they don't, they put it away. So that happens a few times in this episode, which I mean I get it, but also it's like and so he basically is trying to explore the town and ask around about Holly and Vince and no one really wants to talk to him about it because that's the most recently disappeared couple. It is kind of funny though. He says his name is John Bowman.
Bonham.
Sorry. I wrote my bad notes. John Bonham and gets called out for it.
It's so. Okay. We're not huge Led Zeppelin fans.
No. I know who he is though. He's kind of a big deal, but. Yeah,
he's kind of a deal, but my favorite Screeching Weasel song is I Hate Led Zeppelin, and that's been one of my favorite songs since I was 15 years old. So anyhow, okay,
so moving on. So we cut back to Sam,
and Sammy's a girl
sneaking up on some chick on the side of the road, which is
that's that weird sketchy.
So sketchy. I'm like, what the fuck is this bitch doing? And anyway, so she's sitting on the side of a country road all by herself, like nothing anywhere around her. And he totally sneaks up on her because she's listening to headphones. I was able to pull what song I think it is. It appears to be a song called Puppet, which is kind of funny at this point, by a band named Coalpitz with a Z, Coalpitz, who I'm not familiar with. And I chose not to look up any further, but I thought the name of the song was an interesting one going into the episode. Cause this is all we know right now is there's a fucking scarecrow. And you're like, well, obviously that scarecrow is not animating itself. It's just my assumption on the supernatural show. So, I was like, ooh, well, that's clever. Okay. Let's see what's happening here. But yeah, so both this chick and Sam are apparently, hitchhiking and, she gets in a shady van. She doesn't want to talk to Sam, but she gets in a shady van. So good for her.
Yeah. So a couple of things ahead that I had. She also says that he could be some kind of a freak. So yeah. We have the freak thing is coming out again. And then my note on like getting into the van, I'm like, because that isn't shady. So both of us are like, nope, this is shady. Yeah. So shady.
So yeah. So anyways, we cut back to Dean in town and he's just really trying to ask around and everybody in this town is just kind of like, nope, didn't recognize them. Who knows? We don't get a lot of outsiders here. And then the teenage chick, she's like an older teenager, whatever. She shows up and she's like, oh, wait, didn't that guy have a forearm tattoo? And then the couple is kind of like, oh, yeah. Because obviously she like lives with them. And so they're like, oh, yeah, we saw them. They weren't here long. They left by kind of thing, which is kind of funny. But the tattoo came back. So I'm like, oh, this is going to be a thing. Yeah, we'll get there, kind of.
And this is where it happens. This is where Dean calls it a tat.
Is it? I thought it was later.
No, I have it right here. It says, which Dean calls a tat because it's followed by ugh. And so just so you know, if you use the word tat, you're not cool. It's really annoying. My BFF, who is a tattoo artist, says calling a tat to a tat is like calling your country a cunt. So, but yeah, no, that word is gross. I don't want to hear that you have a cool tat or that you got inked. Like none of these things make you a cool person.
I mean, like I've heard like funny jokes like, oh, let's get party tats or something like that. Like from in tattoo worlds, I will say things like that. But if you're not in that circle and actually doing that, don't fucking use that. The tattoo.
It's not a cool word. And if you ask me to look at my tats or you tell me that I have a good tat, no, I will not like you.
So bad. So basically he's having a terrible time.
Go ahead. The other thing I have in this is so I was also really impressed that Emily knew where the gas tank was.
Yeah.
Because that's not not a normal place for a gas tank to be in a car anymore, to be behind the license plate. And she just went straight for it. So
that's true.
She knows her cars.
It didn't stand out to me because that's where it is on Duchess, but you're correct. That is a good note for sure. Because it is not a normal place. I hate filling it up there, but that's okay.
Why?
It's just, well, because like you can't put the cap anywhere because you don't want to scratch your paint. And then you don't, anyway, and then the license plate's like spring loaded. So you have to like hold it open. And then modern gas pumps, it's kind of hard to like, depending on the neck of your gas tank, you have to like kind of shove that sucker in there and hold it.
You got to put it in real deep and then you got to hold it.
You got to push it in real deep and hold it there. And then depending on how good and modern your gas tank is, which mine is not, there's a really high chance of like splashback. So I'm like, I was like, hey, Dad. I mean, I can put gas in my car. I have put gas in my car multiple times. But if I don't have to, I'm like, hey, Dad, put gas in my car. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So if we were in Jersey, like, you wouldn't have to do that. And then you would have to watch some, like, 15-year-old guy trying to figure that out. And it'd be fucking hilarious, especially because you'd be doing it while it's snowing. And
isn't that Oregon, too, that's like that, where you can't put your own gas in Oregon?
Oregon. But I spent more time in Jersey, which always keep me. It always keep me because you don't turn off the car. That's what creeps me out the most. It's like,
which is weird because sometimes I usually turn mine off, but they have like signs all over our gas pumps like, turn off your car. I don't know.
Yep.
And your cell phone's going to cause a static shock that explodes the entire gas station,
explodes! Which is not. You're gonna blow thing up.
Not real.
You should be more concerned about the skimmers that are in those gas tanks that are taking information.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyhow, so blah, blah, blah. Back to this episode. By the way, 14% wine, told you it was going to get dirty.
Yeah. And Dean retraces their steps.
What other thing? Emily also notes how the town is blessed. I think that's important.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It is. She's talking about how blessed the town is. So Dean goes to follow the path of basically see where these folks drove off to and follow their path and finds the goddamn orchard. Because that's what he does. And then because his EMP meter was going off. So that's why he like was like, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. EMF.
EMF. God damn it. I knew I was. I'm all over the place tonight. I got my pronunciation. I got my musicians and my electronics all wrong tonight.
Damn it. 60s Diana does not know about things like EMF.
I wouldn't know these things. So his EMF reader is going nuts. So he pulls over to this orchard. And then... he's checking out this. He finds the scarecrow. Obviously.
Oh, yeah.
That's when he says "cool tat."
Yeah.
So he sees. So he's looking at the scarecrow and like checking it out, and he pulls up a ladder and it's like getting close to this nasty thing. Which also, it is weird that a scarecrow is armed. For the record, like that's not normal for it to have like a weapon in its hand. In this,
but window. Also convenient there is a ladder. I mean, I know it's an orchard, but that was a nice ladder. I was like, yeah. I would use
He sees the scarecrow's arm is partially exposed where it's holding its, I mean, it's a kind of like a reaping tool. So it's like some kind of a mini scythe kind of thing. I don't know what you call it. Farm implement. That's sharp. And he sees like this on the mummified arm of this scarecrow, this faded out tattoo. It's all fucked up. And that's where he's like, ooh, and he goes, nice chat.
Yeah.
After he says, dude, you fugly. I believe he said that first. He says, dude, he did, you fugly. Then he gets on the ladder and says, nice tat. And I kind of wanted to knock him off the ladder between those two statements, but okay.
Yeah. But also, how long has it been since you've heard the term fugly?
It's been a minute and I was appreciative of it. I wrote it down. I liked it so much. So
yeah. And in my head, I always go to the cheerleader, like F-U-G-L-Y, you ain't got no alibi, you fugly. You fugly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, anyway.
Okay.
So
now, yeah. This is when all the shit that I apparently I skipped.
You're jumping. Sorry, you're jumping.
I skipped.
So this is when he goes back to the service station. He talks to Emily. And she's putting gas in his car, and that's when she explains that she lives with her aunt and uncle, and that's when she talks about how the town is blessed, that it just kind of is. And then he asks about the scarecrow, and she's like, "It just kind of always been there." And then he notices a broken down car. And of course, it belongs to a couple who's stuck there because their car broke down. Bum, bum, bum.
It was a nice truck too. Like it was, it looked a nice pickup. I'd be like, yeah.
And so, of course he wants, we'll come back to him in a minute, but Sam's trying to get on a bus ticket to California from wherever the fuck he is in the middle of nowhere, sitting there hanging out with this weird blonde chick, but they can't get a California bus ticket until the next day. So now he's going to sleep in the bus station apparently. And that's where like the chick shows up. Her name is Meg. She is very flirty. And she does say that she's no longer riding in that van because that van was shady apparently, but that she also apparently is destined for California.
Convenient.
So yeah. Interesting. Oh my God, I don't trust this bitch. Anyways. So they go, we should cut back to Dean. And of course he's going to go try to like talk to this couple in the cafe because they're broken down. He knows they're next on the fucking list.
And so, he wants pie.
Well, I mean, yeah, everybody wants pie. Duh. So he's in there and just trying to like kind of give him a hint, trying to like feel him out, offers to help him, tries to warn them that they aren't safe. And they are not interested in his warnings or offers because he is not smooth at all. And the restaurant owner calls the sheriff on him, who runs Dean out of town.
Yeah. And so, like, he was super creepy. And I also would be like, no, dude, like, not, please step like, off. No, like,
please don't touch my brake lines.
Yeah, no, you sound like a serial killer is what you sound like. Yeah. But then I was also thinking about, like, so can sheriffs really run people out of town like that?
I mean, I'm sure they can try. I mean, what are you going to do? Fight them?
I don't know. I mean, like, what was he doing?
Are there legal ramifications for running for a sheriff running someone out of town? I don't think so. But I mean, if he's going to physically remove you from town, I'm sure he's physically capable of doing that.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been run out of town by a sheriff, please let us know.
Yeah. Like, I was like, that's, yeah, no, I know. I was like,
this seems very violating of rights.
Yeah. I was like, oh, you didn't, he's not being detained. I figured they would just trespass him out of the restaurant.
He's not doing anything. He's just being creepy and asking weird questions.
Yeah. I mean, they could have trespassed him out of the restaurant. That's what I would have thought. That's what I thought was going to happen. Was that he didn't trespass him out of the restaurant.
Cause you could say, I want you to leave my restaurant. If I refuse to leave, then he's committing a crime. Okay.
Yeah. That's what I assume. That's what I thought they were going to do, but you can't really trespass someone out of town. From my understanding, so so we cut back to Meg and Sam having some shitty vending machine food and beers, which that's kind of random. I guess they went and bought them somewhere else at the bus station, which has ashtrays in it.
It's 2000s, you know, bus trays. You're probably smoking bus stations.
I still doubt that, but it was still weird. And so she's telling a whole story about how she just wanted to get away from her family and how that's why she's on the go by herself and had to make her own life kind of thing, her own life choices. And Sam's like, yeah, I totally relate to that because that's what he thinks he's doing.
Well, and it was like everything she is saying is everything he wants to hear, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like too perfect. That's why I told you I don't trust this bitch. So anyways, though her toast was... the food might be bad and the beds might be hard, but at least we're living our own lives and no one else's.
Yeah. So I'm trying to adjust my headphones and my hair is doing this really weird poking in the back. I'm like Diana's super amazing beehive. Like my hair is just doing this weird shit.
Looks better in this camera than it does in real life, but we'll take it. So anyway, so of course Dean's going to go back to town at night. Duh, because he's not going to leave well enough alone. And of course, that couple that ignored him are broken down and walking through the orchard. And there's a fucking scarecrow. And so Dean shows up because he knows that that's where they're going to be because this is the pattern, right? So he's following the pattern and he tells them that they need to go to the fucking car and start blasting the scarecrow with his shotgun with the rock salt in it. Which doesn't really do anything to the scarecrow. Barely slows it down.
No. But he also, in the end, like the scarecrow's like, okay, this is a lot of work and I'm tired. He's like,
yeah, fuck this, I'm done.
I've been up on a post all day. Like, it's really hard. I guess, yeah, I'm just going to go back. And I just wanted to eat this nice couple and you're taking away my hamburger. So I'm going to go back up to my post.
Yeah. And the dude goes, what was that? And Dean goes, don't ask.
Which is legit, yeah.
Which I'm just gonna say, no, fuck you. I don't care what I believe in or not. I just saw some crazy ass shit in the woods. Tell me what the fuck that was, you know.
And I'm like, can we go set it on fire? Like, I'm not gonna as much as I want to save myself, I'm also like, I don't want to leave that there. Like, I would not just be like, I'm gonna leave town and ignore the scarecrow that was running after me.
Yeah, sounds dangerous. Sounds irresponsible.
I'm like, but, what kind of PTSD therapy you're going to have or a scarecrow that try to eat you?
And then they
won't
believe you. No one is going to believe you. Yeah. So anyways, so we cut back to the bus station. And though, even though Sam's had this like weird revelation, talking to Meg about her family and him relating about how he wants his own life, not his brother's life, all that, you know, and not what his family wants for him. They're actually on the phone together. Sam and Dean are now. So I thought it was an interesting okay, first, like a minute ago, he's like, yeah, fuck this. I'm doing my own thing, not my family thing. And then he's already back talking to his brother. I think it's a bad thing.
We also don't know who called who.
No, we don't. They don't show us that, but they do get on the phone together. This is where they start discussing and about what's happening, and it's been determined that pretty much it's not something that's being animated. It's some kind of a pagan god figure, and because of the cycle and that they're after a couple and so on and so forth, there's just too many indicators that it wouldn't be a standard your good old-fashioned animation. It's a
it's not a ghost, it's a god. It's,
yeah, it's yeah. So that, and that the town, like with the apple pie and everything else, are fattening people up for sacrifice. Ooh. And to bless the town is kind of the whole idea.
Does that mean like towns with good pies are evil? Like Marble Falls has a really good pie and people line up forever for that. If you ever go through Texas, stop in Marble Falls. And I think it's the Blue Bonnet.
Blue Bonnet Cafe has been like the best pie in Texas.
They have, oh my God, their pie is so good. Fuck, yeah. I had to go get pie now. Okay.
So Dean's going to go to the college for ask for research help at this point, though.
Yeah, but also, I mean, so this call, like, I think a lot of things, like, it's a damn good feeling call.
It is. They kind of have, like, these unspoken apologies where they kind of accept each other and kind of, like, deal with, they're like, hey, here's what's going on, but also not asking each other for anything. And
Dean says, tell Sam that he's proud of him. Yeah, and I think Sam needs that approval, right? Because he's got the daddy issues of like, my dad never approves of me, but my big brother is who I've always looked up to. So to have the big brother be the one who comes in and says, I am proud of you. As much as I give you shit for this, like I couldn't do this. Like you were a good man for standing up and saying no. Right. And so, yeah, very feely talk. I appreciated it. I thought it was a really good phone call.
It was, but I was kind of annoyed because that's also, I was like, damn it, what the fuck's going to happen? Now we have to wait for them to get back together.
I know, but also sometimes in those relationships, which I think is good, you have to get some space, right? Yeah. Like you can't be up on each other's nuts all the time. And so you have to like get away from each other to really kind of figure out what's going on. Right. And I think, you know, fucking Meg, like basically telling Sam back all the things that he is feeling.
Blind. Yeah.
Is probably also opening his eyes of like, oh, this is what I'm doing. Maybe it's not like where I'm supposed to be. Yeah. Maybe this isn't right.
Yeah.
And it's as much as I hate my dad, I have this brother and I have his brother who needs me. So anyhow. All right. So we're at the community college.
Yes. These are some impressive ass professors at these community colleges. I'm just saying. I don't want to talk down on myself because I did teach at a community college.
And you were an amazing professor, but did you have a book that was like that?
No. Am I going to have like the badass research materials at the community college? No. We teach you your basics so you can get those credits for cheap and go on to a fucking real university that we studied at to be able to teach.
Like, were you going to like pull out a book with like the original like Texas Independence or like these are the original letters of the guys to the Alamo? No. Like, I'm just going to whip these out of my community college campus. Yeah,
sure. We just keep these on file in the library at our community college. No, fuck that. That's not how it works. But okay, good. I mean, cool story, but no. So they've got this super the cigarette smoking man is a super impressive professor at in small town in Indiana, apparently. And so Dean goes to talk to him and looking for info specifically on a Norse god who lives in an orchard. They're looking and then they see the drawing of what looks like a scarecrow, but that's not precisely what it is in one of the texts, this fancy ass old text. So I'm gonna turn over to Liz because I feel like we're getting into Liz's area.
We are about to. And so they get to Norse because they're like the people who settled here were from Scandinavia. And so this is Indiana, right?
Yes.
So that's not weird. You know, generally most of the populations from Scandinavia are probably higher up in the U.S. So we'll see like Minnesota. Wisconsin, they've got there's so many Scandinavians up there and that's why they're all freaking blonde and huge.
My mom's Norwegian.
Yeah. According to my ancestry, I have a lot of Swedishness in me. And that's also my ancestry DNA, which just says, don't go out in the sun. You will be set on fire because you're white as fuck.
Mine's based on like immigration records and family stories, but I have not done ancestry or anything.
No, my immigration records, like I know, like I have the half of me that came from Poland, but the Poland was all precious stuff. But my part of the family that ended up being from the British Isles and being in Ireland and Scotland, which means it's not surprising that there is a bunch of Swedes in there because Swedes came over and fucked a bunch of people and then like laid their claim there, which is where we're going to get into this. So that's how we go from Scandinavia to being like, hey, these are the Norse gods. And they're like, this is Vanir. Vanir, and this is gonna be really hard for me to say after the switch one. We're going into lore. It's lore time.
Lore.
Also, so Dean's talking about like what happened, you know, so you're going to find the sacred tree, like what's going to happen, and he gets hit with a shotgun. So we're going to talk about this as Dean's fever dream. So as he's knocked down, he's learning about this. So the Vanir. I don't know. All right. So in Norse mythology, the Vanir are a group of gods associated with fertility, wisdom, nature, magic, and the ability to see a future. And not a lot is known about the historical worship of this group of gods. And some of this is because some of their practices probably offended those who are writing history down. Also, there are some things within the Eddas and the sagas of Norse mythology that make it kind of confusing. But I will say in modern times that if you look at Vanir, you can find a Viking folk metal band from Denmark whose lead singer is, of course, named Lars. And according to the Instagram, they are Denmark's number one Viking metal band. And you can join us as we set sail for foreign shores. So I would highly encourage you to check out the video Blood Sacrifice on YouTube. And I believe there is a chicken there and she's playing bagpipes. I don't know what the bagpipes have to do with Viking folk rock, but why the fuck not? She's also not listed in their current band members, so I don't know where this shit came from, but this video was highly entertaining, so go check out Vanir. All right, so the Vanir are one of two groups of gods, the others being the Æsir, or the Æsir, depending on who's talking. Æsir is more of the Old Norse pronunciation. I'm still going to say it wrong. But there is a theory that the Vanir were not a separate type of gods, but rather that was a mistranslation of alliteration in Nordic poetry. But also, interesting enough, like between the two, we do find that they are condemned for their incest practice. So we're going to talk about some weird sex stuff they do. And, you know, we're going to talk about some of their major gods and goddesses. And again, I'm not going to attempt to pronounce any of this shit correctly. But if you want to watch someone who has the right accents that makes them sound damn fun, I highly recommend looking up this. Diana's heard me talk about this guy for days. So there is a snack of a cowboy old Norse mythology scholar named Dr. Jackson Crawford. And he has so many YouTube videos. I am now a Patreon follower of him because I have fallen in love with him because he's a fucking snack. But so you can go, he has a video on how to pronounce Norse gods' names, and he does this in a cowboy hat in front of an epic snow mountain in Wyoming. And he also has the proclivity for pearl snap shirts. So quite a bit of my research for this came from watching his videos because they were full of
it was
knowledge.
An excuse to watch his videos. It was
yes, totally an excuse to watch his videos because he's fucking hot. But he's also like very knowledgeable. He used to be a professor at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and he stepped away to that like because one, he is like YouTube star, like he has over like 100,000 subscribers, but he's awesome. Like, he's just really fucking impressive. Also, I did note that a lot of his videos were brought to you by Grim Frost, And you can go to Grimfrost if you need her rings for your Viking beard. And if you ever want to get some bronze wolves to like put around your Viking beard, this is the place to go. Also, they have drinking horns. So many drinking horns. Oh, so man. Yeah. So Grimfrost.
All right.
Yeah, go visit their website. All right. So the Veneer gods are mainly going to be talking about Njord and his two kids, the twins, Frey and Freya. So Njord is the god of wind and of the sea and its riches. His aid was often invoked in seafaring and in hunting, and he was considered the god of wealth bestowal or prosperity. So he fathered Freyr and Freya, they say, with his sister, which is why people are like, we don't like we don't like these gods. They fuck their brothers and their sisters.
I feel like these ancient gods did a lot of that.
Yeah, well, but it's really interesting. Like half of the Norse gods are like, this is cool. And the other half are like, nah, that's not cool. Don't fuck your sister. So, we don't actually know who his sister was and who he fucked to father them. But so he's associated with rain, sunshine, harvest, and prosperity. And so then we have his son, Freyr, who is the central god of male fertility. And he is particularly associated with horse cults. And I want you to keep that in mind at the end of the lore segment, right? So Freyr likes horse cults. And also because he's a fertility god, the phallic symbol is also associated with him to highlight his status. So there are lots of statues they think are his because they have an erect dick. So they're like, yes, this is clearly Freyr. There's a penis. So it must be him. When he wants to travel around, he travels on his trusted boar, Gullinbursti, and on the ship called Skildbarnird, which can be folded so tiny that it fits into a pouch. And his animals, his animals were the horse and the boar, but he did share the latter with his sister Freya, and that sow was one of her by names, and Freyr, his boar, that one I just talked about, Gullinbursti, that name transfers to gold bristles, and his horse was named Bloody Hoof.
Oh, damn.
So he rides a pig named Gold Bristles and a horse named Bloody Hoof. So I love him. All right. So Freya, she is a fairly well-known goddess. Yeah. And I actually was listening to a podcast before we even got into this. It was talking about Norse mythology. And the woman who was on that said that apparently Freya is a really popular name for girl babies these days. And she's in England. So this may just be an English thing, but I think it's just interesting. This is like having a comeback as a name. So
yeah, it is.
Okay. And sometimes she's just not Freyr's sister. Sometimes she's also his wife. But she also, like, they both marry giants and they fuck other people. But so she is associated with cats.
So she's polyamorous with her brother.
She's so poly. This girl is beyond poly. All right. So she's this is why one of the reasons I love her. She's associated with cats. And when she travels, she drives her two cats in a chariot. So her and her two cats are just driving around in a chariot.
I like it. I approve.
Yep. And one of the Eddic poems, Loki does accuse Freya of, probably accurately, of having slept with all the gods and elves, including her brother. But also, she's a goddess of fertility. So, of course, she's going to fuck. I mean, what else? I'm here to make things fertile. I can't be fertile if I'm not fucking. So she's also sometimes known as the Lady of the Hall of the Battle Fallen in Valhalla. So if you die, I think most people know about Norse myth that if you die in battle, then you go to Valhalla, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah, blah.
The tables, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So what about the sacrifice, right? Because that's what this episode's about. So a lot of what we know about where the Vanir come from is there was a battle. And so there was a battle between the Aesir and the Vanir. And so when that happens, they end up taking Njord and Freyr as hostages, and then Odin asked Freya to oversee and continue the blood sacrifices. So we have that part. So that's coming in. So she preserved peace among the gods and maintained the cycles of fertility that kept the world in motion. So part of that has to come from sacrifice. And she was praised and celebrated so much that her personal name was applied to all ladies of good social standing. So we have a lot of Norse women named Freya. But she also has connections to magic and divination. And in the saga of the Ynglings, they say that she brought Sæðr magic to the Æsir. So the Sæðr magic is all about knowing people's fates, causing death, bad luck, and like you could also like take away health from other people. And it's often been associated with dark magic and black magic, but they think that's because only women were supposed to practice it. So men who practiced it were considered unmanly, and in Norse culture, that is a no-no. No. Like you have to be manly as fuck. So if you're doing women shit, like it's gonna be bad. But so the women who practiced this magic that she brought were known as the vulva, not related to my vaginal vulva, but what spelled, it looks more like the car Volvo with like an umlaut and an A. But really also vulva is really related to the term for staff. So there's all these descriptions, all these badass like seers who have like these staffs that they're carrying around. And they're a very powerful female shaman. The male counterpart was known as the Vitki, which is one of the words we think where witch came from. So when these women would like do this stuff, they would fall into a trance while choirs of other women would invoke her guardian spirit to come to her aid. And in this inspired state, the spirits would inform her about all the things that she wanted to ask. So what, you know, what's the weather going to be? Because, you know, you didn't have, you know, weather.com.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, like, is the weather going to be good? What things are going to happen? Is there going to be happiness? What are they going to be the misfortune for men? They also were often used to predict battles. So there's a story that Sæðr has of there is a battle where this Germanic tribe just turned away because they were like, nah, our bitches said no, don't go. This is gonna end badly.
This is gonna go bad for us. We're out.
This is gonna be bad for us. Nope, not gonna do it. So while like women are, you know, being unmanly is a terrible thing, the women are also being respected and listened to, and this, which I think is an interesting dichotomy, right? So we have this, you have to be super manly, but this woman's hearing stuff, and so you're gonna do what she says. So while she's in the state, you know, her soul is traveling to other worlds and she's fetching knowledge. And so these vulva would travel around the countryside, usually by wagons. And there's lots of stories about like different things where people are running around from wagons. They were notorious for sexual deviance and for also bringing bad luck. So they tell you good things, but they're going to fuck a lot. And if you fuck them, you may have some bad luck. And the Eric the Red saga, the vulva is portrayed as wearing the skins of many living creatures and has to eat the hearts of everything living available. So I think that's one of the things that kind of goes back to the sacrifice. She's eating like pretty much was like, okay, what is living in here? I got to eat their hearts. And they also were wearing hoods and gloves that were lined with cat skin, which goes back to Freya and her cat. So kind of going into that, it's hard for us to know about what was really going on in Norse culture just because of how things are written. So a lot of things that were being written were done from like early stuff was done from the perspective of the Romans who were walking around. So the Roman writer Tacitus wrote about the Germanic tribes. And so I like that he's been guilty of interpretatio Romana, which is basically means the Roman interpretation of shit. So we're going to look at everything from our perspective.
Right.
And he talks about, you know, there was this wagon where these people were worshiping a statue in it, and she was being carried around by a wagon with a priest, and then she was washed by the slaves, and then after she did her thing and told the fortune, then she returned to her island and the slaves would clean her up, and then they were drowned in the lake. So we get to the sacrifice there. So we have like, okay, we're going to catch you around in a wagon and then we're going to drown you because she's got to be virtuous. So for her to be virtuous, you got to be dead. But what's interesting is, what's interesting, I think 1200 years after Tacitus, and there is in one of the Eddas, the god Freyr is described as being driven around a wagon in Sweden. So we're still like, gods are like in these wagons and they're being driven around. And this talks about this guy Gurnar, who had the fortune of being invited on a tour of the countryside by Freyr's priestess slash wife. And while it was stuck in a snowstorm, it says that the idol Freyr came to life and fought with Grunar, who pledged to the Christian god. This was not an edit. This was a Christian shit. So while he's stuck in a snowstorm, he pledged to the Christian god that he would turn this to Christianity if he could vanquish the idol. So he had his wish. He overcame the statue Freyr. And so like they have this, like him and the statue have this epic battle. And then like, but basically he replaced him and spent the rest of the tour posing as Freyr, riding around the countryside and impregnating all the priestesses. Okay.
Oh, okay then.
Okay, similar to the sacrifice, you'll hear a lot of times in Norse mythology the term blót, rhymes with goat, blót. Okay. And if you look at that, B-L-O-T, that looks like blood. But it really means blessing. It's not necessarily mean we have to kill something to make a sacrifice. We just have to be like something we want to give up. So of course now I'm going to talk about dicks. Because what do we love? We love dick magic. That is what we're here about. We're all about the dick magic. All right. So just so you know, like there are no Norse temples that have been preserved in their entirety, but there is a place in Lunda, Sweden, where there is a worship site, and in there there are remnants of fires with burnt animal bones and also figurines that look like they have been hanged. Their feet were pointed down and their necks looked like they were like kind of strangled and squeezed. Ooh. And according to Dr. Crawford, they looked like they're ithyphallic. And he was like, if you don't know what that means, I'm not going to tell you, look it up. And I did. And it means erect penis. So
are you even more excited that that's how he described erect penis as the term?
It's like, I wanted to be like, I am feeling very ithyphallic. So if you want to, you can go, the Sturmlands Museum does have pics of these figures, and yeah, they all have erect penises. They're actually not that impressive of penises. They're really kind of tiny. So, which does make me wonder, like, if you're going to make a statue of something, and you're like, I want your dick to be out, like, give the man like a little, give a little extra. Like, it doesn't need to be like little, like, you know, like people are gonna be looking at this for thousands of years.
You,
like,
you never know what societal standards were at different times. People were
I'm pretty sure women always appreciated girth and length. Like, that's not. All right. So there was an 11th century story from another Christian dude who's a cleric, Adam of Bremen, of a temple in Uppsala, Sweden. And he said there was a temple there with a roof of gold, and there were three statues of Thor, Odin, and Freyr. And they're assuming it was Freyr because he described it as having a very large phallus. So, all right, more dicks. Woohoo! So these gods were apparently sacrificed for war and marriage. And near like where they were at, there was a well, and men were tossed into the well to help predict the future. So if the guy sunk, then the gods would do what you want. I mean, which seems counterintuitive to me, because I would think like if the guy floated, they'd be like, cool, the gods are on my side. But no, if you die, the gods are going to do what we want to do.
You have to appease them, that's why.
And nearby to that, there was also a place where nine members of nine different species, that's men, dogs, horses, etc., were sacrificed for a festival that happened for 9 days and happens every 9 years. And according to them, the sacrifice was done by being hanged. So apparently most of the sacrifice during this time was by hanging. So that was something that was important.
Interesting. I don't think I recall hearing many sacrifices being done by hanging historically.
Yeah, and so most of them that are in
usually more of a punishment than a sacrifice method.
Yeah, and right? This is one of the things that I was thinking when we were looking at this. I was looking at doing something on Wickerman, which is the if you ever seen the movie, but there is the whole pagan thing where they said that druids built a giant, basically wooden structure that was stuffed with people and animals and shit and then set on fire as a sacrifice. Uh-huh. But I decided to stick more of the story and go with Vinir. But, you know, hey, so they hung people. Yeah. There's also an Icelandic saga about a guy who moved from Norway to Iceland. He built a temple with a pillar in the middle, and there was a bowl on top of that. And then whatever was sacrificed would have its blood in the bowl. And then there was a stick. And the stick would be used to throw blood on the wall. and on the people. And there is no archaeological like things that back this up. We do have a lot of things to back up that there were sacrifices of horses, which if you've never taken the time to look up Icelandic horses, you would be very upset. Yeah. And I went to Iceland specifically to look for these fucking horses because they are sassy as fuck and they're everywhere. I think there's more horses than there are people. They all have these glorious manes that are just like epic beauty things that are flowing in the wind. And of course, they have major attitude because when I finally got to hang out with the fucking Icelandic horses, they bit me. So I was like, here, eat this apple, you gorgeous horse. And it was like, I would like this apple. I would also like to bite your hand because I'm a dick. So maybe I'm not that mad those horses were sacrificed. Yeah. But we also know just beyond the archaeological thing that based on the laws that were made to try and stop people from being pagan to convert to Christianity, mm-hmm. there were a lot of laws that outlawed the eating of horse meat because they're like, oh, if we outlaw this, then they won't be doing the sacrifice. There were exceptions that were made for some special days they could eat that. And if you do go to Iceland or other parts of the world, I think we've maybe talked about this here before, but yeah, people eat horse meat still. Yeah. When I was in Iceland, it was on a lot of menus.
I don't want to, but whatever.
Yeah,
it's like, very common in other parts of the world. Absolutely.
It is very common. It does fall under I am not a vegetarian anymore. I just don't eat things that are cute. So horses fall under the things that are cute. And so I don't eat them. All right. So more dicks. All right. So closer to 100 stone phalluses have been found in Norway. And they are symbolic representations of the penis representing male potency and fertility, which is what the Vidir gods are known for. It is believed that animal and human sacrifices were made to a symbolic phallus that were thought to ensure a new crop among people, animals, and nature. So the guys in this episode, like, you're good. Like, you're just getting eaten. They're not chopping off your dick. So you're good. Yeah. So we're going to end the lore with a quick story about the Scandinavian story of Vorsa Pater. I have no idea that I'm saying that right. It's a short story. But we can't talk about sacrifices and dicks without talking about this. So this story was originally recorded in the 1380s. They believe that this took place in 10, like, very specific date of 1029. I don't know how they get to this very specific time, but all right. So there was a farm with an old man and a wife and their daughter and two slaves, and their horse died, and they skinned and ate everything but its penis. And then the son, being a boy, decided he wanted to tease his sister and everyone else off with this. He ran around with a stick and like, ah, look, I have a horse stick. So then they decided to clean it up and they kept it wrapped in a cloth and with herbs to preserve it. And then every night at dinner, the wife would take the dick out and pass it around and everyone would write a poem about it. So one night, the King Olaf, is nearby, and he needs somewhere to spend the night. So he goes to the farmer's house in disguise to see, like, hey, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to disguise myself as a peasant. So the farmer invites him in and offers him dinner. But just when they're about to eat, the wife walks in. But of course, she has Volsi, which is the penis, with her, and she wants everybody to do her ceremony. So she recites a verse and passes it to her husband, and he's very embarrassed in front of his guests. But he does a verse, and then the son gets it and he says, may your bridesmaids bring you a cock, they will make the print wet tonight. And then the sister, she gets her verse to show off that she hates this, and she says, I swear by Gufjun and the other gods that against my will do I touch this long red nose. And then it gets to the slave woman, and she starts stroking it and says, surely I would not overcome the temptation of thrusting you into myself if we were lying alone, pleasuring one another. So when it gets to the King Olaf's turn, he reveals himself, and then he just starts preaching about Christianity. But the old woman was like, I don't think you're the king. And the husband was like, well, maybe you are the king, and I want to know about Christianity. And so finally, they all agree to be baptized, and they remain Christian ever since. So that's the story of King Olaf and the dick. And we're going to stop lore there.
I
got nothing.
I got nothing. Yeah. I can't.
We did not expect the veneer mythology to go to horse dick, did we?
There's a lot of horse dick in the story, and some very special fantasies about horse dick, and a amputated horse dick too, especially that I'm still processing here. But
yeah. It's a very well-known and popular story that, I mean, even if I'm assuming this is not true, and but also, like, what I'm really trying to figure out is this was really the story was made to talk about why you should convert to Christianity, and so why, like, somebody made up the story about the horse dick.
I feel like there's a lot of stories that you could, like, takeaways from this that you could have is, I don't know, like, don't have weird ceremonies with horse dicks. I mean, that's a real simple one. You don't have to make deep religious decisions about.
But I also like how the slave woman was like, I'm going to fuck the horse dick.
Like, yeah, she's like, I'm into it. Let's do it. Like, she's
yeah,
ready.
I'm making a dildo out of the horse dick. And yeah.
She's like, y'all just pass this dick around. Can I go use it in the bedroom real fast? Like, she's like, ready.
But I also like how there's like the younger sister who's like, I'm so over your shit. Put the dick away. Just put the, we're done. Put the dick up. I want to eat my dinner.
Mom, do you have to bring the dick out of your company?
Every time.
So embarrassing, Mom. Oh, God. Isn't that what was happening?
To this teenager, it's just like, oh my God. Like, you think your mom is embarrassing? So my mom has this horse dick and
I'm gonna go eat my room. Ugh.
I mean, really, and like the story is like this woman is like literally praying, and I guess it's supposed to be idolatry worship, but it's like that's the idol that you choose. You choose like the horse penis.
It's a very interesting choice.
Yeah. So Norse mythology. Yay. And I'm sure we have many opportunities within this 15 years of Supernaturalicum to talk about other things. But highly recommend go check out Dr. Jackson Crawford if you're a chick. He's very interesting.
Or if you're a dude who's into Norse.
It really history. Like his stuff is fantastic. He is so fucking knowledgeable. I learned so much watching all of his things. I was not just drooling about him.
He does have a lovely backdrop in his like.
Yeah, he films in Colorado and Wyoming.
Yeah,
all sorts of great things. Although he does have a tendency to say "hua" when he's like talking about WH, so the "where" and the "wisp" and the "when," which drives me fucking insane. Stop doing that, Dr. Crawford. Please stop.
All right, there we go.
Laura's over. We can get back to you. I think last we left this, Dean was getting hit in the face with a shotgun.
Yeah, he pretty much got hit in the face with a shotgun. Obviously the professor was in on that. So we find the next scene is basically the couple and the people from the town that they've shown so far, Scotty and this couple, the aunt, uncle and all that, are standing with their umbrellas very close in the rain, plotting about how important it is to protect the town. And they, you know, the one couple that runs like the little like shop at or whatever, I don't know what else to call it, that gave the pie to the first couple we saw. Are basically, they don't really sound like they want to participate anymore. They're like, this is kind of bullshit. We don't really like this anymore. But they get kind of bullied into it.
We are uncomfortable. Like, killing strangers was fine. But now, like...
Now it's uncomfortable because apparently the decision is that Dean and Emily, the teenish chick that lives with her aunt and uncle, are going to be the fucking sacrifices. Quote, for the common good.
Yeah. Also, like, commies. I hate that fucking phrase. Like...
Fucking commies.
China's like, they're pinkos. And I'm just like, in general, like the sacrifice of one for the good of many always is going to give me the heebs. It will always. And I know it's a very giant trolley car problem, but it's a heebie jeebie question. Yeah. And I don't like it. Mm-hmm. So we
cut back to Sam, and he's been trying to call Dean, who isn't answering his phone. So he's like, fuck this, my brother's in trouble, I gotta go after him, and bails on going to California. It's just a brief scene. And Meg tries to kind of steer him to go to California still, but he's like, nah, I know my brother's in
trouble.
She's
also not very convincing. She's just very whiny. Not. Like, what? But Sam, what about our problems?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she like goes from being like kind of flirty to kind of like wine either. But anyway, so now we've got Emily and Dean locked in like the fucking cellar under this house. She had no idea that this shit was going on in this town. She just knew that the town was very blessed, even though shit's going bad in other towns around us. We're just lucky, and I live with my aunt and uncle, and they just shoved me in a fucking cellar with you. So that's lovely. Anyway, so he starts asking her questions about like what she knows about the town, and is there a special tree, because that's what's going to be tied to the veneer, which is the scarecrow. So animated by the god, basically. So she knows there's a thing called the first tree. So they're hoping to find the first tree so they can burn that motherfucker down. When they basically get dragged out to the woods by the townspeople that have been involved, the couple, Scotty from the aunt uncle, Scotty from the restaurant, the sheriff, and get tied up and in the orchard, because they're just like, fuck it, we're not even gonna try to lead you in here. You know what the fuck's going on. We're gonna tie your asses up and feed you to the scarecrow, because why not? So Dean's like, you know, asking the sheriff how much blood's on your hands, and they're all just kind of like basically saying it doesn't matter, kind of an attitude. And anyway, so then it turns to night, and they're just waiting on the scarecrow to show up. But Sam shows up, which is awesome. But the scarecrow is already off of his stupor pole or whatever the fuck it is. So
yeah, and my note about that, it was just like, Dean was so proud that Sam stole a car.
He was so proud of him, because he's like, how'd you get your... Yeah, that seems like a Dean thing to be proud of. So, I thought it was interesting that they're like, oh, there's supposed to be a scarecrow in that giant thing, but no. So they're going to try to find the sacred tree, and they get cornered by all the townspeople because they knew something was going to happen and ruin their fucking sacrifice again. So they were all hanging around, and while they're talking shit about it being a sacrifice, blah, 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 well, Scarecrow sneaks up, and he gets a couple all fucking right. It's just not Dean and Emily. It's the aunt and uncle.
Wow. Yep. And my note is like, I'm not sad the uncle got killed. However, I am very upset by the drag by the Achilles heel. Oh. Like, I was like, oh, ow. Like, that's painful.
Unnecessarily painful.
Yep.
But yeah. So anyways, it turns to daylight pretty fast, and they find this fucking tree with like carvings in it. So they dump a bunch of gas on it and set it on fire. Like you do. Burn it.
Well, also Emily's the one
who wants to light it. She's like, nah, I'm gonna light this bitch, and she's ready to do it. So she lights the tree on fire. Like gets a stick burning real good and lights the tree on fire. It cuts to the next scene is her just getting on a bus to Boston. She's out. She's like, fuck this town. And everybody knows the town's gonna go to shit anyways. They said all their neighboring towns have already gone to shit. So
yep.
There you go. So we get basically the next important part of Sam and Dean's relationship is that Sam is going to stay with Dean on their mission. He basically acknowledges that, you know, mom and Jess are gone. Dad is who knows where he is. And so they really need to stick together is kind of the attitude, which is sweet.
Yeah. And so really sweet that Dean says, hold me, Sam. That was beautiful.
Yeah, because he has to say something like that. Yeah, so, but the episode's not done yet.
We're not done. Oh, no. Where do we go to now? We're going to go to Meg, and she's in another creepy van.
This bitch loves her creepy vans, and I could not tell what the mural on the side of his van was, and it was very
upsetting. Oh, I'm going to give
mural, I'll go on the back. Side of it, and I couldn't tell what it is, and then I forgot to rewind and pause it because I was pissed.
I will go back and I will try and find out what
we need that image. We'll Instagram the creepy van.
Yep. And this guy who is gross is also really think he's getting lucky, which is like, if you're a creepy guy in a van and there's a semi-hot chick in there with you and she's like, yeah, let's pull over, like, and as long as she's like saying, give me $1,000 before we pull over, like,
yeah,
she does not want you. Nobody wants you, creepy guy with van.
No. So, and then apparently the song that was playing here, which is another funny, somebody was being clever, I feel like, as the creepy van is pulling over, that she told to pull over, apparently it's a song called Push-ins by Autumn's Descent. So Push-ins. So someone's being naughty with their jokes. All right, anyway, so and she pulls a silver bowl out of her bag, says she needs to make a fucking call, okay, and cuts his motherfucking neck. So slits the dude's throat, starts collecting the blood in this bowl. And I have in caps, I knew she was the shady one. Because remember, we were talking about these shady vans and she was talking about shady people and all our shady vans. And
I'm sorry, I'm dying.
I knew she was the shady one.
So this is why I'm laughing. So one of Diana's dogs is going through some trauma and Diana is required to collect the pee in like a tray. So, and she's having difficulties collecting the pee in the tray. So now I'm just
getting about, a dog urine sample is not easy. I'm just saying.
But also like she was able to get this throat blood to like go very easily into a bowl. But I'm also just picturing her running around trying to get like, capture the guy's blood, like Diana is trying to capture the dog's pee. But anyways, okay, so we're on a serious note. All right, Meg is
so this shady bitch Meg has collected this blood quite successfully from this dude's throat that she just cut, and starts stirring the blood with her finger, and it gets all spiky, and she starts asking it questions like why she had to let Sam go and whatnot, and you don't really hear an answer, but she's just like, okay, kind of a deal. I'm like,
well, she also says, yes, father, which is an interesting thing that she says. But yeah, so she stuck her finger in a biohazard and stirred it around. And that's, y'all are gross. Like, you're just shoving your fingers in blood. Like, that's just nasty.
Yeah.
I mean, put some gloves on. Like, I mean, I'm sure you got some nitrile gloves, like, around somewhere. Just put that on before you shove your finger in. Like, that guy did not look clean. I don't know what was in his blood, but I would not want to put my finger in it. And also, there is that kind of thought of, like, supernatural Hermione has not researched this. It's like, how long would it take somebody's neck blood to fill up a bowl?
Well, she didn't even need a whole blood full. That would seem kind of like a lot of, like, mess for very limited need. Like, oh, she needed like they take more blood than that when you donate blood. Like, what the fuck? She like needed like this little like tiny bit in this bottom of the silver dish. Like, I feel like she
he stop bleeding? Like, I mean, a carotid artery that she just cut. So I'm assuming
he's gonna be dead.
There's gonna be more blood that's like pouring like everywhere next to her while she's
I'm just saying she was being wasteful.
Yeah. Well, what else was she supposed to do with that blood? What are the crafting purposes?
That's not my problem. She's the one using blood. She needs to be more useful in or more thoughtful in her use of blood, apparently, or maybe not kill people when she uses their blood. I don't know. That's not my problem. I'm just saying that it was wasteful.
So you're saying like she could just have like a hypodermic needle and just be pulling out shit and like pour it in. Diana knows. Sorry, my theories about things that people do in supernatural shows are unhygienic. Like, you know, I'm gonna share a knife and we're all gonna cut our wrists together or our hands together and like pull blood out. I'm like, you could honestly just like get a phlebotomist in there and have her just come through and pull this out. And
it's not very ceremonial. I'm just saying though, she probably could have cut like his arm and drained some blood from him and like knocked him out. You know what I mean?
Maybe she just was tired of fucking creepy guy. Like
maybe she's just an evil bitch and wants to kill people.
Also like creepy dude in van.
Just because you drive a van and look skeezy doesn't necessarily mean you're a bad guy.
Just because you drive a van, look skeezy, and pick up teenage girls on the side of the road, it's no reason to say that you're a terrible person. You're probably nobody's going to miss you. We're basically going to call our demon lord.
Anyways. Fair enough. All right. Well, yeah. So it was as you alluded to at the beginning, this episode really was, I think, pretty pivotal in Sam and Dean's relationship. And I think we really needed to get here or it was going to get annoying. I'm not wrong. I know that. But I think that it was really important for them to have this moment where they did separate and really analyze kind of how they felt about each other and their missions, and then have the opportunity to choose to get back together instead of feeling forced. Does that make sense? So, and that was the path they chose, was the path together after assessing all the options.
Yep. Also, fucking hate scarecrows. Yeah, hate Leatherface scarecrows. I don't like particularly any scarecrows. And so I guess maybe it was a raven in a former life, but I just like, I see them, they creep me out. But just in general, effigies in the middle of a field.
Yeah,
not a good thing. Not a fan. No. Anything else you want to say about this episode? What are your thoughts on Meg? This is what I want to know. Like,
I think the bitch seems shady as shit. I don't trust her.
Do you think she's going to be around more? Like, what are...
Oh, obviously she's coming back. They wouldn't have put her at the end of the episode like that if she was not going to be back. And obviously she's being told to be there by something that some, her dad or whatever, but, and has some future plans for the boys since not now or whatever. I don't know. I think there's some tie in there, and she was not accidentally on the side of the road when Sam showed up, obviously.
Well, no shit.
But obviously. I'm intrigued about having another ongoing character, because you have to keep in mind, realistically for me now at episode 11, there's only been two consistent characters the entire the show, and that's Sam.
Well, three. John's also. Yeah,
but he's like legit been in like 30 seconds of three episodes.
True.
So that barely counts. Other than them talking about him all the time. I mean, and then they'd be on the same level almost as Jess, you know what I mean? Where they had like one conversation and then she did, and we just talk about her being dead all the time. So I think, you know, I think it could be interesting to have another ongoing character. But I don't necessarily like dislike the character. I just know she's shady as shit and I don't trust her.
Oh, yeah, no, she's shady as fuck. But what about, so what are your thoughts on just the choice of this show going for a monster of the week? Like, we're going to keep pursuing pagan gods that are eating people in a field, as opposed to pursuing the other storyline of, we now know demons killed Mom and Jess.
Well, I mean, if you want to look at a sales perspective, it's much easier to have a show that could be standalone episodes week to week. But so that's part of the reason, I'm sure, which is the monster of the week concept. But I don't know. I mean, like, obviously it was a story choice by the writers to do that, where they want to leave Dad on that mission and let the boys, obviously the brothers, I mean, whatever, the brothers do what they need to do. And go take care of the stuff their dad used to. Cause I guess that's kind of the concept I get, is like, Dad's now focused on this mission. They're going to continue the other family mission of like fucking saving people. That's what I'm reading it as. Yeah. Like dividing up the responsibilities, where like, A, we all want to find out what happened to Mom. And of course, Jess then, but if we're all focused on that, then this other stuff falls to the wayside. So we have to choose who's doing what. Dad's already down this rabbit hole. He doesn't want us involved in it. He feels confident in it and really feels strongly about our safety in him going off on this on his own. So we'll continue the other things, which are also important. Like, I don't know, like making sure fucking, you know, Norse pagan gods don't fucking eat people's faces in the middle of an orchard.
Yeah. And take their ugly tattoos and yeah. Which is weird. That was a very weird choice, but yeah. Cool. Yeah. So I think that could wrap it up for this week's episode, unless you have anything else.
No. I think the show did a good job wrapping itself up in a lot of ways. So I think that helped, like, as far as the relationships go.
Yep. So we're halfway through season one. Good things are going to come out of this. All right. Well, until next time. Cheers, jerk.
Cheers, bitch.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Devil's Trap Podcast.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram, Devil's Trap Podcast, Twitter, Devil's Trap Pod, or you can email us, devilstrap@devilstrappodcast.com.
Don't forget to subscribe, leave reviews, and share it with all your friends. We're available at all your major podcast listening devices, or you can always find us at devilstrappodcast.com.
Thanks.
Devil's Trap Podcast is a Don't Be a Dick production. Meow.
Intro music, arrangement and performance by Dave Cox. Piano arrangement and performance by Bobby Orozco. Meow.